Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim with Fred, we thank you for listening. Tim Wildman, Fred Jackson. Ed Battagliano is off until 2026. Huh? Our colleague and friend, Ed Battagliano, if you're wondering where he went.
See you next year.
So do we. He just went away. Said he'd be back next year. Steve Paisley-Jordahl joins us. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, everybody.
How you doing, brother?
I'm well, thank you.
Okay. At the risk of sounding judgmental.
Okay.
Which we all can be from time to time. We have 100 plus staff here.
Mm-hmm.
And there's probably 50% of them who want to take off a lot of days in December, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I've never quite understood this,
yeah.
Except if you have family coming from other, you know, that you don't ever see, so you want to take off. Although I can't imagine any family that you never see and you want them to stay more than a week.
Right.
Then right. You want them to go back to their home.
I believe.
Am I right?
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
So, but what I don't understand is, again, I sound like I'm judging people, and I'm not. Like, maybe I am. I don't know. You tell me. Who want to take off for 2 or 3 weeks in December when it's the coldest and darkest. By darkest, I mean like it gets dark at 5 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Time of the year. So you want to take off.
Mm.
You know, I try to explain to these people. There's something called spring,
yeah,
and summer. And fall, that you can use those same vacation days,
mm-hmm,
and just experience so much of nature. Am I right, Fred?
That's right.
So, Fred, are you with me on this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Not judging them.
No.
But wondering why they do what they do.
Well, the thing is, Tim, ministry is very generous.
Yeah.
At, you know, Christmas time, like last week we had 3 days off, 3 of the 5 working days. It was great.
Yeah.
This week, another couple of days.
Right.
So there's so many days that the ministry is so good to us, give us all this time off.
Yeah.
It's.
I know. We are generous because we are family.
Yeah.
The American family.
Yeah, so it was great.
We try to be generous and our folks work hard all year, so we want to be. But anyway, that's just me. I wasn't talking about Ed. In particular, did I bring Ed's name up?
Ed who?
Yeah,
who
Ed? I know he watches his hockey on his iPad. I know that's very much very important to him. Well, you're a hockey guy too, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm probably not into it as much as Ed.
Ed. He'll stay with those Boston Bruins till they're out of the playoff hunt.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, Steve. How you doing?
Good. I got a hockey story to end this segment with. If
so
we have time.
Stay tuned for that one.
Stay tuned to that one if we have time.
Okay.
Yeah, everything's well. Let's talk about Donald Trump. You know, all in the news last week and the last couple of weeks has been the potential of war with Venezuela, the bombing of these ships. But over Christmas, Donald Trump changed the channel a little bit and launched what he called powerful and deadly strikes against militants linked to ISIS in northwest Nigeria. He says he did this because Nigerians were targeting primarily innocent Christians. And so this was from Truth Social. He said, tonight at my direction as Commander-in-Chief, the United States has launched a powerful and deadly strike against ISIS terrorist scum in northwest Nigeria, who had been targeting and viciously killing primarily innocent Christians at levels not seen for many years.
Well, this took place. Did this take place on Christmas Day, Fred?
It did. Yeah, Christmas Day.
So the weapons that were launched, were they launched from the ocean? From a carrier?
From a carrier. Yep. That's what I understand, yeah.
Now,
and it had the blessing of the Nigerian government, is my understanding.
And they said that it's not, the Nigerian government said this isn't about a religious thing. It's about ISIS.
ISIS is religious.
Well, the Nigerian government.
The very name of it is Islamic.
Yes, but the Nigerian government wanting, because there's a Muslim population that they want to kind of, they're trying to separate the ISIS
terrorists from the peaceful Muslims.
Peaceful Muslims in the country. Yeah. They don't want to excite the passions of the unpeaceful Muslims. But Trump says it's because they're attacking Christians. Who's attacking Christians? It's the Muslims that are doing it. The Nigerian government says, well, we're just going after the terrorists. So
okay. So the United States of America, with cooperation or agreement from the government of Nigeria, launched a missile or missiles from the ocean from one of our carriers out there, our battleships. Nigeria's pretty deep into Africa, isn't it?
In the middle. Right in the middle of
that's amazing that we have a smart bomb that can travel that far. Well, we did it again in the Iranian war, but we were closer, seems to me, but that with the ships. But anyway, so launch a missile that flies over Africa and hits in the middle of it at a precise location, and what President Trump is saying, it hit, and I guess the Nigerian government confirmed this.
Yes,
that it hit a ISIS.
Or
run,
ISIS.
Or something similar to ISIS.
Yeah.
Boko Haram is popular there, which is kind of the same thing.
And they have been, it's well noted in all kinds of news services, they have been targeting Christians.
Yes.
Yeah, they've been abducting young girls from Christian schools.
Yeah.
That's what's been going on.
Yeah, so President Trump hit them hard.
Yeah.
He did.
So we'll see what the result of that is.
Yep.
Anyway, that happened on Christmas Day.
Christmas Day.
All right, you're listening to today's issues on AFR. Next story, Steve.
I know you talked earlier this show about Mamdani and his fire chief and everything. I wanted to check in with New York City to see how the government's going there. They have a new law called COPA, which stands for Community Opportunity to Purchase Act.
Okay.
And I have a guy here, one of the this is a person who is not in favor of COPA. And
at the Copacabana,
it is like Copacabana, except nothing the same.
Huh?
This will explain it a little bit. Let's listen to
the guy's name is not Barry Manilow, is it?
His name is not Barry.
Okay, he's a New Yorker, you know.
Yes, cut 15.
New York City's COPA law. Let me tell you how it works. Step one: you have to decide that you're going to sell your building. Hold on, you can't list it publicly yet. Step two, you notify nonprofits to see if they want to buy it. They then have a 30-day window to tell you if they're interested or not. If you don't, it's a $30,000 fine. But here's the bad news. If they are interested, they have up to 120 days to give you an offer. Now, if you don't want to accept that offer, that's when you can put it on the open market. If you put it on the open market and you get an offer that you absolutely love, you then have to offer it back to the city at that same price, causing tremendous delays in the closing process, which inevitably leads to dead deals. If you look at a crashing industry, well, this is the perfect way to do it.
So basically, if you want to sell your building, you have to sell it to the government or nonprofits. They're not private deals are dying in New York City, private real estate deals.
Well, this guy hadn't even been installed into office yet.
No,
right?
But the spirit of Mamdani is already
spirit of Mamdani
working in New York City.
All right, sounds like I don't know.
Well, that's what socialist governments do. They nationalize things. They take over companies.
They do in the name of price control.
Yep.
And for the little person, take over everything and make things worse.
Yep.
Yep.
My dad used to say, the free enterprise system undergirded by Christian principles has done the greatest good for mankind than any other economic system in the world.
This is
that's true.
It is, and it's a lesson that young people have lost. Every generation needs to learn for itself, I guess, the evils of communism. If you ask someone that was, like our age, we'll point to what happened with Pot Paul or with Russia, the USSR. We remember the evils of communism, China.
Pot Paul.
Pol Pot.
That's like pull pork.
Pol Pot was a dictator in Cambodia.
I don't remember him. Well, thank you for letting me know.
He was perhaps one of the most deadliest communist leaders for killing his own people. But anybody our age will remember the communism in Russia, how it was evil for deadly.
The former Soviet Union.
Former Soviet Union, yep. And former communist China under Mao Zedong and the Cultural Revolution that just decimated.
Communism and dictatorships also go hand in hand.
They do, but every generation has to learn this for themselves because we have a whole generation of young people now who think socialism is great, even though it's never proven.
But it sounds appealing. It's like utopia.
Right.
To these folks.
Here's when the young people learn it's bad. When they go out and they get a job and they start looking at their paycheck. Mm-hmm. And they're seeing how much they're taxed. Mm-hmm. And they're saying, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. What do you mean I have to pay for this? I have to pay for universal child care, which is what one of the things he's bringing in. What do you mean I have to pay for that grocery store for people to have cheap groceries?
Yeah.
What do you mean I have to pay for free transit?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It is. That does change your attitude when you see how much money is being taken out of your check to promote socialism. All right, next story.
All right.
We've already done two New York stories now. We don't need another one, okay?
New York City.
New York City. Mondani.
The euphemistically called gender-affirming care is dying a slow but sure death right now. Several countries, this is, if you have a, especially for young people, for minors, if they have gender dysphoria and they think they're the other gender, a lot of people in this country for years have said, fine, we will treat you, we'll give you gender.
Whatever you call yourself, that's what we're going with.
And not only that, but we'll affirm it with drugs that will sterilize you, keep you from having puberty, and we'll chop off body parts if you want. And we'll keep that from parents. That was kind of the direction everything was going. Well, Newsweek has published a study, is highlighting a study called The Treatment for Pediatric Gender Dysphoria, a Review of Evidence and Best Practices. And it is by a couple, Madi Gorin and Kathleen McDevitt. And they note, given the current widespread distrust of HHS, especially regarding vaccines, we knew this review, which we co-authored, would meet with skepticism, so it is worth noting that we, along with most of the other authors, are liberals. This is not some conservative group that's forwarding what we know is the truth.
That you might expect to see this.
Right. This is liberals who took a look at the evidence of how things are going. And what they found is that the U.S. justification for giving drugs and surgeries to these people was basically largely based on a Dutch experiment that consisted of just 70 adolescents who had been gender nonconforming, so to speak, since early childhood. The vast majority of these, 62 out of the 70, reported being gay or homosexual. During the study, one patient died of surgical complications due to having been given puberty blockers years earlier. Some of the people of 70 developed diabetes and were excluded from final data analysis. Others were lost to follow-up. The remaining 55 patients underwent surgical transition. All were rendered sterile. In short, the medical practice, now known euphemistically as pediatric gender-affirming care, is based on methodologically weak research that sterilized a group of gay or bisexual youth and left one of them dead. They are saying that there is no good justification for giving young people any kind of intervention other than psychological intervention, help them deal with gender dysphoria. Now, there's still a lot of people who will try to affirm, but there's no justification for medical intervention on young people. It's damaging, and it shouldn't happen. And several countries around the world, England being one, and some of the Scandinavian countries have already come to this conclusion and banned it. And the United States needs to be next.
Well, now, I thought President Trump he issued some kind of an executive order. One of the first things he did.
Yes.
On this issue. I've forgotten exactly what happened, but. And many states have also passed legislation, red states in particular, protecting kids.
There are some blue states who are biding their time, I think, hoping for a new administration. Right now, all these procedures are on hold. It does need legislation at the state level. There's no reason. Studies like this don't validate the fact that it is damaging.
Yeah.
To try to medically help these kids.
And you would think that you think that's obvious and common sense, but
you would.
Let me change subject just a minute.
Yeah.
You didn't know I was going to bring this up, Steve, but you keep up with AI pretty well.
I do. Might try.
Artificial intelligence. I noticed a story on Fox. It was an interview with James Woods. He's the actor.
Uh-huh.
Many people know. If you don't know that name, you would know his face.
Sure.
He's been in many popular movies over the last three or four decades. James Woods, Oscar nominated. Anyway, he is saying that it won't be long before artificial intelligence puts actors out of business. Okay. So here's what he's saying. He's saying that, artificial intelligence, we've all seen the videos here. They do deep fakes now. They do videos that that look so realistic, you wonder, is this real or is this a computer-generated image or a scene or something like that?
Uh-huh.
He's saying, James Woods is saying, now he's saying for right now, and maybe, I don't know, the next 10 years or so, he says it wouldn't work so well at the box office, for example, or streaming, because, I'll just use Americans or North Americans in Canada, people like their favorite actors,
right,
or actresses.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll go see a movie, for example, if Tom Hanks is in it, or Meryl Streep is in it, or that's a big attraction for people because they kind of like that actor and they think that they do good movies,
right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But what he's saying is, as soon as this generation, I don't know how you define that exactly, maybe 10 years or so, the generation of people familiar with actors today who are...
Once these actors retire.
Big stars.
Right.
Then they are going to lose interest in whoever the actors and actresses are, and they're going to switch over to... the AI generated
mm-hmm.
movies.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Television shows, I guess.
I don't know how they're going to avoid it. I think right now you're right. Tom Hanks and Tom Cruise and all those people can sue if their image was AI generated and they weren't involved. So they won't do that. But the first AI stars, let's say, a movie that these movies spend tens of millions of dollars.
Right.
To employ
these
actors.
It's going to be financial. Oh, yeah.
So if you can do it for free just by computer generating it, you're saving millions and millions of dollars. I don't know how you
But would people, I guess it remains unseen, would people watch, would they go to movies or watch television shows that they know are not real people? Would people do that?
I think so.
You think so?
People.
Maybe the younger generation, by younger I mean under 40 maybe, would convert
sure.
over to that?
Sure. It's already, the Instagrams, the little 30-second, 40-second little videos that you see, so many of them, and they look so real.
That's true.
They look so real that, and I could see, these big movie companies saying, I don't have to hire all of these crews and
right.
keep them around.
Right.
I don't have to pay $20 million. Is that what Tom Cruise gets for a movie?
About that, yeah.
All that sort of thing.
Well, then the movies and TV shows and whatever else you want to watch as entertainment will be that can be created by a 15-year-old.
That's right.
At home.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, if they know enough about technology.
Yes.
That kind of thing would be on the right. And we're seeing a lot of that now. A lot of that kind of going on. And you're right. These little short videos. My wife had Instagram pulled up the other day. She doesn't subscribe to it, but it was somebody sent her a video, I think, to watch. And you, but then you start scrolling these, and I've done it on YouTube before. You start scrolling, and before you know it, you're like going, what happened to the last 3 hours?
Yeah.
Because they got these little 15-second or 30-second funnies. And I was watching one the other day, and I with her, she was saying, watch this. And I said, you know, that doesn't look right. That looks like it's – and about every third one, you would go, oh, that's genuine, that's real. And then then you'd go – some of you'd go, that looks like it was either staged or – it's computer generated, especially with pets.
Right.
Yes.
With pet, you see one of these pets do certain things, and it looks like that looks like a computer generated. You know,
or it's impossible. I saw just a bunch of these videos of dogs going over and covering up little babies right before an earthquake strikes, like they're supposed to know, and then they're sacrificing themselves. That's unrealistic.
Right. Right. Right.
It looked real.
But yeah. It's kind of America's funniest home videos that we used to watch on TV, put on the internet.
Yep.
But today, I guess so many people create fake ones or something. Yep. I don't know. But anyway, it'll be interesting to see if James Woods, he's a legendary actor. He's a conservative, one of the few in Hollywood. But if his prediction comes to pass in the next few years, whether people move away from traditional movies to going to see to just going for the AI-generated movies, which are computer-generated, and no actors. You don't have to film something on a set. I mean, that could devastate the entertainment industry in many ways. Am I right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. All right, next story.
All right. I want to introduce you to 104-year-old World War II veteran Dominic Critelli.
How do I know he's not AI-generated?
Just listen to this.
Okay.
He was asked to perform the national anthem at an Islanders hockey game, and this is what it sounded like. Cut 14.
And here to perform our national anthem, please welcome 104-year-old World War II Army veteran, Staff Sergeant Dominic Critelli.
Not bad for 104 years old.
I'll say, was that a saxophone he's playing?
It was.
What is that?
Soprano sax.
Soprano sax. I've watched that video.
Yeah, it's a soprano saxophone.
It's not AI.
What's the guy's name with the long hair? Soprano saxophone used to play.
Kenny G. He doesn't play the saxophone.
He does.
Does he?
Okay. Soprano sax. Anyway.
Steve set me straight pretty quick, didn't you?
We only have a couple
a
minutes. I wanted to say that Mr. Critelli, he braved Normandy, and he was one of the people that flew ammunition and stuff into the people that were cut off during the Battle of the Bulge, a great danger to himself during World War II.
What was what's his name?
Dominic Critelli.
We salute you.
104.
104 years old, still playing the saxophone, and was invited by the New York Islanders hockey team to play the national anthem. Well, good on them, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
That is a good news story to end the day
with.
There you go.
It is. Even if it's from New York.
That's right. All right, thank you for joining us, everybody. Appreciate it very much. Have a great day. Keep listening to AFR. We'll see you back here tomorrow.